The problem with work is hard work isn't rewarded.
I've got a pretty good gut sense for people's strengths and weaknesses, whether they have that certain something to make it in journalism. It's tough business, a lot of stress.
Definitely.
And I have to tell you, you don't got it. Now, guts can be wrong. Mine's been wrong before, but not often.
I thought I was doing okay.
I just don't think you really have the drive to put yourself out there, to be honest. To get a story, to dig. I mean, just now in this meeting, I encouraged everyone to say whatever they wanted. You said nothing.
I wasn't sure if I should.
Exactly. I mean, you saw Harry. He jumped right into the fire. You didn't.
But Harry's not an intern.
Doesn't matter.
I've always done what's asked of me.
See, the thing is, in the real world, it's not always good enough to do just what's asked of you.
But I thought I was in a really good rhythm with everyone here.
I'm not saying you're not competent. You're smart. You're terrific at anticipating needs. Actually, you'd make a great assistant.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It's not my pleasure to disappoint someone like you. But it's healthy. I don't know any other way. I don't BS.
I should get back.
Hey, listen. I know this is rough, but I may have just done you a big favor.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
For those of you who aren't Gilmore Girls super fans like me, that was Rory being told by her boss that despite her hard work, he didn't think she would make a good reporter. Rory had excelled in high school, earning a scholarship to Yale, but during her first job experience, traits like organization and research didn't matter as much as risk-taking and curiosity. Not to spoil it for you, but she doesn't take this first bout of rejection very well. This is Fast Company's The New Way We Work, where we take listeners on a journey through the changing landscape of our work lives and explain exactly what we need to build the future we want. I'm Fast Company Deputy Editor Kathleen Davis. The theme of this season is the problem with work. And one of the secret problems with work is that hard work alone isn't enough to get ahead. It's a hard wake-up call for those of us, myself included, who, like Rory Gilmore, spent our school years working hard to get all A's, doing all the things we were told were key to a successful life. But the truth is that work and the rest of the quote-unquote real world isn't a meritocracy. The most hardworking, even the smartest or most talented people aren't always the ones who end up in power. So what are the unspoken rules of work? If hard work alone isn't what matters, then what does? And is there a way to shift what we value and make things more fair? To help me answer those questions and more is Jill Katz. She's the founder of Assemble HR Consulting, a talent strategy and communications firm that focuses on culture, communication, conflict, and change in the workplace. Jill, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Kate. It's so good to be here with you.
So let's start with breaking down why people who work so hard in school, for example, and they get all A's, they're not necessarily the ones that end up doing so well at work.
Well, the fact is what we do in school is really different from what we do in work, right, Kate? When we go to school, we learn how to be great test takers, great note takers, great multitaskers. And we also learn to be really good individual contributors. We're in school for our own personal success. But school does not necessarily prepare all of us to be great leaders or team players. And so not the same. We graduate from school, whatever level we matriculate to, and then suddenly we're out in the world as adults, and there's an entirely new skill set that we need to learn in order to be successful.
That's such a great point that I'd never thought of. You're in school for yourself. You're in school to get your own good grades. You're only responsible for yourself. But in the workplace, you're never only responsible for yourself. It's the, you know, good of the company, the benefit of the company. You have to work as a team. You know, it just makes me think of like the group projects in school where the sometimes the A student, and I'm pointing at myself a little bit, would be like, ugh, I'll just do it all myself. Like, you know, and that sort of mentality gets your group the good grade, gets you the good grade. grade, but does not work in the workplace. So let's talk about some of the traits and behaviors that do get rewarded at work.
Well, so it's interesting. The things that seem to be rewarded at work are what we call the visible work traits. And they are often things that can be measured. So that might be completing a project or making a presentation or being the person that leads an initiative. If it can be really seen clearly, if it can be measured, and if it is visible, it seems to be rewarded.
And I want to dig into that a little bit more because it's, you know, we're talking about, you know, that meritocracy is not necessarily true in the workplace. I do feel like we've been kind of told the wrong thing. It's like work hard and you'll be rewarded. But what you're saying, and definitely rings true, is that it's the visible work. It's not necessarily just like working hard. It's making sure that people see that you're working hard or think that you're working hard, maybe even if you're working not so hard. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the like the personality traits, the like self-promotion, it seems like, that goes into to success at work?
Sometimes it is seen that the people who have the bigger personalities or the louder personalities or people that are more comfortable with self-promotion, people that are more comfortable communicating outward the things that they're doing, the people that are more naturally put in charge of projects and the people that are more comfortable sort of beating their own chest. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with these traits. They do not make for bad people, negative people in the workplace. There's a real place in the workplace for these people. But people who tend to be more introverted or people who tend to fall into more caretaking tasks or roles tend to be recognized less.
Yeah, I want to dig into that caretaking roles. And you're right, you know, we may paint it as this is good and this is bad. But yes, being a self-advocate, you know, it's I guess how you phrase it. If you say self-promotional, it sounds kind of bad. If you say a self-advocate, having that sort of personality, obviously it gets rewarded at work and it's not necessarily bad. But there is that other type of work that's very important that is not visible and not noticed. You mentioned kind of caretaking. We've done a whole episode on kind of emotional labor in the office. But let's kind of dig into that. What's the kind of work that doesn't get rewarded, that emotional, invisible work of the office, which is essential too?
So the invisible work that doesn't get taken as important or is not recognized as often can sometimes be called office housework. And my gosh, doesn't that sound yucky?
Mm-hmm. But accurate. Like as soon as you say it, you know, you kind of get a feel for what that is. But yeah.
Yeah. Office housework. And, you know, and if you do the research on it, you read that and you think, my gosh, it's such a bummer because the invisible work in so many cases, it's this overlooked, undervalued work because it's not as easily quantifiable. And although it's not as quantifiable, in so many ways, you could argue that it is the most important work that gets done in the workplace. And it can be described in so many ways. So some examples of what this invisible work includes could be conflict management, helping people to get through hard situations. And as any one of us knows, there is conflict in the workplace every day. In fact, conflict in the workplace is important. You want there to be good conflict in the workplace because conflict, when managed properly, creates innovation. This invisible work includes skill building. It includes relationship building. It includes mentorship. It includes the empathy that we've been talking so much about recently. There is a great deal of this invisible work that includes the work, the promotion, the investment in DE&I, which has become more and more of a conversation lately, motivation and engagement of employees. So everything that you think of when you think about leading others and creating the cultures that we talk so much about is considered invisible work. There is another part of invisible work as well, which is what is sometimes called the administrative or operational side, which is not sexy, Kate. No one thinks of this as the sexy work, but it is a lot of the stuff that makes people feel good. So when you think about the person on the team who is collecting money for somebody's birthday gift or organizing files, there's someone on my team who just took about a week reorganizing our entire file system so that we can better access things in a more thoughtful way. That is a beautiful example of invisible work. And oh my gosh, is it going to make a difference for us? And so scheduling meetings, scheduling parties, working on that type of stuff, that is another really important part of invisible work.
There's so much in invisible work, right? There's the, as you mentioned, the office housework, non-sexy administrative stuff, which is just essential to keep things running. Who takes the notes in the meeting? Who, you know, as you said, schedules the meetings? Who's in charge of, like, figures all of that stuff out? It's just assumed that they do it. It's invisible because it helps things run. And if it wasn't there, things would fall apart, but you kind of don't appreciate it. Obviously, it happens in the household too. But then there's that, you know, and that the household just magically runs itself. But there's, you know, there's that relationship bit I think is so interesting and so important. And, you know, we just had an episode about management and what makes a good boss. And the guest on that episode said that when you're a manager, relationships are 75% of your job. Like, the management part is 75%. And everything you're describing is relationships. It's what keeps people at their job. You know, if there's not somebody that remembers your birthday or sends you flowers when you have a death in the family or does, you know, acknowledges your work anniversary, kind of keeps that, like, makes you feel good to work there, then you'll probably leave. And so that, like, relationship management is such an important part, but isn't visible, isn't, like, flashy, doesn't have a big dollar amount on it. So it kind of gets overlooked, right?
It's funny that you say that, because as I thought about our conversation today and prepared for it, I thought about really sort of the mantra of what we do at Assemble. And when we show up to any of our meetings, we wear t-shirts. And our t-shirts say, it's all about relationships. That's actually our hashtag. And it is what we believe to be the foundation of what we do in our business. Because amazingly, no matter what happens in a business, no matter what business a company is in, it really is all about relationships. When you find that relationships are solid, you see more job satisfaction. You see more accountability on a team. You see more highly engaged employees. You see better productivity and ultimately better results in the business. All of this has a direct tie to relationships. And amazingly, this is invisible.
And I don't want to overlook the, you know, the important piece that you mentioned about DE&I. That's unfortunately a lot of businesses are like, oh, that's a nice to have. You know, that's so important to relationships. It's so important to employee engagement. It's so important to keeping people there and keeping a diverse set of people there who then have a diverse set of ideas that then make your business more successful. Like, it's just this, you know, like, interconnected thing. And, you know, the other thing that I think about when we talk about relationships is it's the only thing that AI can't do, right? Like, it's the thing that's not going to, it's the skill that you can't replace.
You couldn't say it better. We could definitely have an entire podcast on the DE&I aspect of this and how important it is and how, in fact, there is a disproportionate impact on women and people of color toward invisible work. And why is that? It's probably due to gendered assumptions, expectations, social conditioning. And there's so much to be said there. But you are 100% right that the only thing AI can do, I think AI is ultimately going to be able to bathe the dog and do the dishes and who knows what, maybe even cut the grass, but it will never have empathy, and it will never be able to be your mentor or show you that care or be the one that's there for you when you're working through a personal challenge. And those things will never be unimportant in the world of work.
I'm so glad that you brought up the racial and gender element to this, because that is kind of, I think, the elephant in the room when we're talking about invisible work, when we talk about being overlooked at work. there's two things that I think about there. There's that, the one, the kind of model minority belief that racial minorities in the workplace kind of have to work twice as hard to get half as much, you know, that old adage. And then there's also the gender element of it, which everybody can instantly identify who gets asked to take the notes in the meeting, who's remembering the birthdays, you know, 9 times out of 10, sometimes 10 times out of 10, it's women in the office. It's interesting because I read that studies show that girls tend to do better at school, get better grades in school than boys do, because teachers, you know, often unintentionally reward students for being quiet and neat and taking notes and all of that sort of thing, which is behavior that society kind of expects of girls. So girls are kind of conditioned in school to, they're rewarded for that behavior. That's classic quote unquote girl behavior. And then we get to work and that's not the sort of behavior that's rewarded. What are your thoughts on kind of how we're conditioning girls in particular to then take these roles that then end up getting kind of overlooked at work?
That is an alarming, alarming fact. That statistic bothers me as the mother of a daughter, because I certainly don't want my daughter to be raised to be quiet. And I do want her to be neat. Let me say that. And I'll tell you, that's not working out so well. But to be quiet and to be the one to tidy up after others and to be the one to take notes for others, that's certainly not what we should be aiming for in our school systems and something that we all need to be thinking about, but it probably isn't untrue. And it is the case that the studies are showing that unquestionably there is a disproportionate amount of women that are falling into roles that are considered invisible work. And conversely, it is men that are in the roles that are more well recognized, that are bigger influencers, that are in more seen roles. But what's also interesting on the other side of that is that in a recent study in 2021 of women in the workplace done by McKinsey, they actually found that women are the better leaders. Women were the better students. Women are growing up to be better leaders. Women are seen as more consistently supporting their employees, which isn't a surprise. Women are championing DE&I. Women are more likely to invest in helping their employees. They're more likely to spend time discussing life changes and navigating careers. They're more likely to be allies to women of color, women of disabilities. And so it is kind of interesting that in some ways we are preparing women and we are disadvantaging them growing up, but women are becoming better leaders.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's that, and we've covered this a couple of different times on the show, that what we believe we as a kind of society, what we viewed leadership as, is kind of what, you know, we're saying when you're in school, be a good student, get good grades. And girls are like, okay, this is what is supposed to do. I'm supposed to be quiet. And, you know, the boys are rambunctious, maybe, you know, and again, this is generalizations. But, and then once you get into the workplace, it's like, no, that being loud and self-promotional and charismatic, you know, that's a word that we hear a lot with leaders, charismatic and be able to kind of hold court in a room, that's now suddenly rewarded. But as we're talking, as we're hearing, it's the relationship building, it's that empathy, it is those like traditional skills that women are encouraged to have, which are viewed as soft, right? Quote unquote soft, and like not as important and not as like business critical. But it's really kind of a rethinking of what we value and what work is for.
Well, you're right. And we're not really doing a good job in business recognizing it, because what's interesting is in those studies, what I learned is they said that 87% of companies say that managers' work supporting employee well-being is critical, and 25% actually recognize it in reviews. And so while everyone is saying, wow, this is so important, we want people to focus on leadership development, when the rubber meets the road, what we're reviewing people on, what we're compensating people on, is in fact the other.
That really speaks to, I think about that a lot, of like the skills versus, you know, the bias that seeps into reviews, that seeps into interviews. Like, oh, they just seem like more of a leader. They just seem like this. Like I say, I reward this. I say I value this. And then the last episode, we talked about the kind of self-fulfilling prophecy of, if you kind of keep promoting the same person to be a leader, then you keep believing that that's what a leader looks like, and you keep kind of filling that mold. If you're a manager or an executive and you're listening to this, how can you start to shift your approach to recognize the other kinds of work and reward that sort of work?
So it really takes an effort, because you're not looking at numbers. You're not seeing things on a daily basis. So the first thing is to acknowledge it. The first thing is to really take the time to be looking for it and to make sure that it matters to you. And you can start with verbal praise. You can start with public acknowledgement. You can start with written praise. I always like to tell people that everyone likes to be recognized in a different way. So one thing to do is start by asking, say to someone, Kate, how do you like to be recognized? Because for Kate, maybe a meeting in private and saying to her, Kate, what you're doing with your team means the world to us. And that might be more important to Kate, but for Jill, being mentioned at a town hall meeting might be more important. And then it's about valuing teamwork and taking the time to really focus on teams around the organization that are excelling, and recognizing that there is a leader of that team who is making an impact. It's about focusing on communication. It's about creating a culture where people feel really comfortable sharing their thoughts and concerns, and recognizing that those type of team cultures make a big difference and certainly differ from teams that are not communicating that way. And then providing resources. It is such recognition for people that are delivering invisible work when you come to them and offer resources like flexible work arrangement, like money toward ERGs, like counseling. And then finally, celebrating milestones. When you see big wins for these groups, recognizing them, calling them out, saying, look what your group did, or look at what this important day is that your group has been working toward. Those are all ways to start recognizing invisible work.
I think the recognition and acknowledgement and praise part is so, so essential, because I feel like there's this mindset of like, well, your paycheck is your reward. You know, you're just like, why do I have to praise you? Why do I? And it's like, you made the point, like everybody wants to be recognized, and it feels really awful to toil, you know, to toil in invisibility, you know, to not be acknowledged for what you're doing. I wonder, to make the tie back to like housework, I think of Eve Rudowsky's Fair Play, and the, you know, for listeners who don't know it, it's a book about evening the workload at home. And she has this moment where she's very frustrated that she's doing everything, and she just makes a spreadsheet called the, I don't know if I should swear, but the stuff that I do. And it was just like a long list of all of the kind of invisible work that she does at home. I'm wondering if in the office, you know, you mentioned it's so important to recognize. I wonder if there's a big gap to overcome, though, of managers and leadership not even knowing that this work is happening, and how they can kind of start to notice and understand and how much is happening since it's invisible.
It's funny that you should mention that. That's actually a recommendation. So what is something that you can do to start noticing the invisible work is to ask leaders to make a list of all the stuff that they do and write all of it down and start to assign a value to it. And then look at what everyone is doing, even right down to ordering the birthday cards, and take a look at that list. And then really be thoughtful about it. Audit the pay disparities. Take a look at that and see if there's a difference between gender, between race. And then consider paying people based on their participation in their committees or in their ERGs, because sometimes you find that people are spending a disproportionate amount of time participating in really important organizations or ERGs in the organization that are really contributing value. And there are some people in the organization that aren't participating outside of their daily job whatsoever. And then celebrating that work, even putting it into organizational newsletters or company emails, letting them know that this is just as important to the company culture as the person who closed the last client deal.
I love the idea too of putting, you know, it can be hard to do, but putting some sort of dollar amount on it. Because as you say, if you are the type of person that closes a big deal that gets, you know, obviously there's a dollar amount attached that gets, that's very visible, especially, you know, you probably are the type of person that would tout that accomplishment on your own. Plus it will, you know, be touted at town halls. But what about the, you know, it's so hard to, but it's so valuable to put a dollar amount on having an ERG and how that makes employees more likely to stay. And what is the cost of an employee leaving or, you know, of having employees that feel more valued and then they're more productive? What's the cost of having a disengaged employee? Like those are harder to put dollar amounts on. And so obviously that's kind of why it doesn't happen. But putting a dollar amount on it, it's a great way to start to see the invisible value.
We do know what the cost is of turnover. And so if we start to think about people staying or going, and we start to think about the fact that someone leaving is time and a half their salary and what it means to bring someone on, and that it can take up to 12 months to have someone be fully onboarded and as effective as their predecessor, you're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty stellar when you stop and say, wow, think about that. And now think about keeping that person in their role where they're contributing above and beyond. And think about that person who is retaining these four other people that work on their team. And so even though you can't say they closed a $50,000 deal, you can start to put numbers to it. They are philosophical a bit, but you can sit down and start putting hard numbers on a piece of paper.
To that point, and to the point of, you know, we've been talking a lot about the relationship building, the relationship management, but there is also just the keep my head down and work hard and do my job sort of employee. That's, you know, and again, as we were talking about, that's what we have been told you're supposed to do all through school. That's what gets rewarded all through school, is just not the above and beyond, but just the hardworking, like, this is my job and I'm going to do my job and I'm not going to like promote myself a bunch. I'm just going to work hard and do my job. If you're that employee, of which there are a lot, and you feel probably understandably undervalued at work, what are some steps you can take to kind of, I don't know, raise your profile or just even have that type of more introverted head down work noticed?
There are a few things that you can do if you feel undervalued and not recognized. The first and most important thing is to understand what value means to you. How do you want to be valued? So in our organization, we have an activity called Motivation for Engagement, and we hang posters all over the wall. We've got over 50 of them, and there are over 50 different ways that people like to be recognized, and they range from more money to a new certification to extra time with your family to a trip to go sit down in the president's office and be recognized personally to being mentioned in an email. And it's amazing, because when we think about how people like to be recognized and valued, for the most part, Kate, we think about more money or a promotion.
Yeah.
But there are hundreds of ways that people like to feel valued. And so the first is for each of us to really think about and identify how we want to be valued and what makes us feel valued. And so even the person who wants to put their head down and work hard has a way that they want to feel valued. It might just be a private note, or it might be the money toward their own resource group. That might mean so much to them. So I think that's the first thing. And then another thing that person can do is seek feedback. And feedback is so important. Ask for feedback on your performance, areas for improvement. That's a great way to know how your work is being perceived and if what you're doing is in fact being recognized. Another thing that's important for someone is to network. Build relationships within the organization. And so the truth is that the days of just sitting at your desk with your headphones on and just quietly doing your work, they're not really the most effective days anymore. The most effective people in an organization are ones that are building relationships, but you can build them in your own way. And so building your network, cultivating positive relationships with coworkers is a great way to gain visibility to the important things that you're doing. And so it's important to remember a lot of people feel undervalued. Oftentimes, even the people who are front and center will report that they feel undervalued, which might be a surprise. We need to do the things and understand what it is that makes us feel valued in order to gain the value.
For the recognition part, I just think about, we had an episode last year about what makes a good job. And I kind of view it as the, you know, there's several different factors. And I always kind of think of the like Maslow's, you know, hierarchy of needs. And for work, pay is kind of a base one, right? Is like, if you don't feel that you're being paid fairly, kind of none of the rest of it matters. But once you kind of meet that one, because you said everybody wants pay, you're right, everybody wants to be paid fairly, then you can kind of get into the other of like, how do you want to be recognized? How do you want to be appreciated? Like check those sorts of boxes. You know, when we talk about doing hard, like keeping your head down and doing hard work and, you know, not kind of seeing the A that you got before when you did what was required, there's an element that we're kind of not talking about at work, which is going above and beyond your job description is now kind of what is expected, right? It's not enough to just, my job is to write and edit this many articles a month. It's what new ideas am I bringing? What kind of innovation? There's, you know, I think there's that part that we haven't talked about yet. That's like reading between the lines of what your job description is and kind of going above and beyond that. Can you talk about that at all?
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I think that even when you look at a job description today, it will say, and additional. It will list the things that we're all supposed to do. And then there is just the understanding that you're expected to do more. In fact, when you think about most performance reviews today, 1 through 5, a 3 is meets expectations.
Yes, I was just going to say that as ambitious people at Fast Company, when we do our performance reviews, there was a lot of, why am I just getting 3s? I should be getting 5s. And it's like, well, no, 5s are extremely exceeds expectations or something. It's like, it's not enough to just do your job. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you nailed it. I'm coaching a C-level executive right now, and that person just got a 3 on their review and is talking to me in our one-on-one conversations about how could they get a 3 on their review. And so it is really, really interesting that we do go through school and we work as hard as we can and we get that A. And that A is our expectation.
The A in school is the 3 in the workplace, which is a really rude awakening.
It is such a awakening, and you can't do better than the A. So if you do everything that you're expected to do, you get the A, and then you get into the workplace. And when you do everything you're expected to do, you get what essentially equates to a C.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It is a really, really confusing concept. And so we're also in this world where there is a pressure to do a really, really great, comprehensive, exhaustive job, and then do so much more. And in a lot of ways, if you think about it, that's where so much of this leadership work becomes even more critical. It's about managing the team, being there for the team, showing empathy, having a mentor, being part of an ERG. All of that, sadly, can be seen as above and beyond when I think it should in fact be an expectation.
That's very true. And I think that's maybe a misconception is like, okay, I'm just doing my job. But you're right. All of those other things, those are not explicit in your job description. Those are all of this invisible work that we've been talking about is in fact above and beyond your normal job. And therefore, even more so, even another tick in the column of why it should be valued and why it should be recognized.
No doubt.
I think, you know, there's a part of it where companies hearing this would say, but that's not us. We are a meritocracy. Companies, you know, obviously believe that and say that they are a meritocracy. What would you say to those companies that tout it and believe it, but kind of aren't it?
I would say prove it. I would say prove it. So, I mean, as I said, what we're seeing is, you know, 87% of companies are saying that they believe managers' work is critical, but only 25% are measuring it. Or for example, 70% of companies said that work promoting DE&I is very or extremely critical, and 24% are measuring it. So where and how is that the meritocracy that they're talking about? What we're measuring and what we're rewarding is what is important to the culture. And so I really do think it's important for organizations to stand behind and measure and reward what they say matters to them.
And I guess the kind of underlying question there then is, if they say they're a meritocracy, but they're not, who is benefiting from that?
Shareholders. Sadly, the answer is shareholders. And I think that is really the struggle here. That's where this gets really, really tricky, because sometimes the board is spending more time looking to deliver the numbers to the shareholders and is focused a little bit less on the culture of the organization. And that's where leadership needs to take a stand and think about the fact that a better culture, in fact, over time will produce better numbers for a company.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to the same drum that I've been beating for a decade of, you know, DE&I is not a nice to have. It's a good for the bottom line.
It is a good for the bottom line, but it's not fast.
Yeah.
It's not fast. None of this is overnight. And so when we're looking to deliver overnight results, this is where this important stuff sometimes goes by the wayside.
It's the opposite of the move fast and break things. It's like move deliberately and build a better workplace.
Exactly.
I wonder, is this a uniquely American problem? Is this a stem from from the beginning of this? Puritans are hard workers, and we are, you know, our founders are hard workers, and this is, we get by on our merit. Is this something that is uniquely American, or is this kind of across a universal of workplace culture?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I'm not sure that I can speak to the universality of it, not being an expert on other cultures. But what does occur to me is that as you go back in our history, there is a huge division between men's work and women's work. There is no doubt that the roles that men and women were playing, as you look back on U.S. history, are what we're seeing here in invisible work and visible work. And throughout history, women tend to be taking on the caretaking housework in earlier times, and now what we consider to be office housework. And so is that the American culture? You could argue, yes, it is, if we look at it from that vantage point.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jill, thank you so much for being on the show. There's a lot of, I think a lot of food for thought for people who maybe have not thought about this before. A lot of invisible work, hopefully now made visible. Thank you so much.
Kate, such a great conversation. Really appreciate it. And I absolutely agree. The fact is, the work that is seen as invisible is so important. And if it wasn't happening, there would not be successful teams in business today.
Yep. Everything would fall apart.
No doubt.
And that's all for this episode. If you're a new listener, be sure to subscribe to The New Way We Work wherever you listen. And if you like this episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And we want to hear from you. Work is changing every day. What's the most pressing issue on your mind? Email us at podcast@fastcompany.com. The New Way We Work is produced by Julia Hsu, Avery Miles, Blake Odom, and Joshua Christensen, with editing by Nicholas Torres.